Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and this is a Zoom call. We're out to Omaha, Nebraska area, and I have the Light and the Steels, Craig and Danny. Hey, thank y'all for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having us on. Thanks, Alan.
So, yeah, man. So, guys, man, tell me a little bit about just the Omaha area and just kind of that music scene. I've never been out that way.
It's really diverse, I would say. It's, everything from hip hop to country, indie metal. All that stuff, and it's all everyone's all kind of like a tight-knit group. Like everyone, like we're in a country band, but we're also in a heavy band, and so it's everyone just kind of hangs out with everyone and does their own thing.
Yeah, right on. So, like, how did you and Danny meet?
Just going to shows, I think.
Yeah,
We
going to
ended up
shows.
going to shows and going to the same bar, and we ended
Yeah.
up living together. And then we ended up starting a band, and we've been playing music together for 15 years or something like that.
Oh, very cool, man. So, like, just between the two of you, like, what was some of those earlier influences that kind of made you want to get into music?
Dan?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess we were both probably, we're, playing records and stuff, hanging out together. But, I don't know. One of the first bands we started probably was more of like a, down the line of like an indie rock sort of straightforward, kind of indie rock band. So more toward like a Pavement sound or, something like that. But yeah, we've dabbled in different types of music. So now we're in like he said, like a heavier, like sort of like post-punk throwback, louder band. So, and now we're doing outlaw country for Craig, so we've done it all. And so that earlier band that sort of brought us together wasn't necessarily, we were listening to older records at the time, and watching old movies and stuff and playing foosball and stuff. So just jacking around, smoking meat and stuff before that became a huge trend,
Yeah.
but yeah, we just kind of started playing music, because both of our bands were sort of bands that we were in, that were different bands, were just like on a short hiatus. So we just were like, hey man, let's start something, but that's kind of how that all came together. And then some of those songs started from just old songs that I had. So it was just, that's maybe where that indie direction came from.
Okay. Right
At
on.
that point, I was still very, very immature, as far as being able to play, and I was still getting my feet wet with everything. And so it took a while. I wasn't like singing or anything at that time. I was just trying to get my bass notes right. And so it took a while for me to kind of branch out into the singing part, and now in this band playing guitar as well. So it's been a fun journey.
I got you. And like one thing I was reading with Lightning the Steels is this Gas Me Up, and this new record is about sobriety. Do you think like the sobriety kind of helps you kind of get to the sound and get to the place mentally you needed to be?
Well, what basically I had a really long career of drinking and drugging, and I got to a point where I just had to quit. And so it all once I got sober was right when COVID started, which was actually really nice because it kept me from being able to go out to the bars and stuff like that. But I needed some kind of outlet, so I had always wanted to do a country band, and I had a bunch of song titles already in my head. And my grandpa was in a country band, and when I was growing up, he always played Waylon and Willie for me. And so, it kind of helped me. It was an outlet for me to like start writing, like just letting everything come out, everything that I was dealing with. And it ended up being a great thing, a tool for me, in sobriety. And this record kind of is just about the things that I'm still dealing with and have dealt with, and all that comes along with it. Not necessarily the glamorous parts of it.
Yeah. Well, like just Danny, back to you for a second as far as like just the style of music and instruments that you play, was it tough transition, like going from a different genre more to this outlaw country?
Absolutely. I was like, I don't know how to play country bass, man.
You know.
They're like, sure you do, you know? But yeah, like definitely shout out to Mike Friedman, sort of like our sensei in the band, if you will. But yeah, he was like he you know, when they had the demos, he showed me what. He's like, I'm no bass player, you know, and he's like showing me what he was doing and showing me how I can choral, you know, incorporate like thirds and fifths and stick to that, you know, stay in the pocket. You know what I mean? And have, you know, either, you know, the off time and the on the one, you know, like sort of, you know, thinking. Man, I love it. It's like such a challenge and like an exercise at the same time, you know. Cause I'm used to like rock bass, you know, like just do do do, you know, like just
Playing, yeah.
attacking, you know, yeah, you know what I mean, just like downstrokes and then you know up and downstrokes, and this is like,
It's rhythmic.
you know, yeah. So it's just like, and you have to know what's coming up because you have to move to the next part, and I can just slide in rock bass, you know what I mean, like. I'm just sliding up to that next thing. So, but yeah, this one is like more punchy and it's like you, the band messes up if I fail. So, yeah, there's a lot riding on
Yeah, Devin, I can
the
totally
duty.
I totally get that. So like I started out I'm 35 and I started playing guitar when I was 15, and in this area where I'm at, I'm in Alabama, but it's right on the Mississippi state line. And so like Alabama, like in this area, the music, I mean, it's a lot of bluegrass, there's a lot of country, but there's also like a lot of great like southern rock. And then you slide over to Mississippi, well, you're in the hill country, you're in the Delta, and so you have the blues infusion. And man, I'd been playing down on the coast. I moved down there for a while. We were kind of doing like an indie rock kind of thing for a while. It was a two piece, and then I would move back up here and was starting to play with like blues bands and like country blues bands. And I mean, this is exactly what you're saying right there. This ain't so much about just droning or just hammering out the notes. It's you got to get in that pocket, I mean, and like, and that is like, to me, that's when I really started like to appreciate bass for what it was. It's like you said, in the pocket. I was like, if I make one wrong move, this song is not right.
It's I feel like I've learned so much and it's allowed me to sort of branch out in, you know, in the other bands that I'm in. So, it's making me think outside of the box that I felt like I was being already held in, you know. So, there's something to that, you know. It's allowing me to sort of branch out in other ways too. But like, yeah, every song on this recording, like I made him sit down with me and be like, "What are you doing here?" You know, like how are you getting to these spots, you know? So, and then I would like play it through until I was ready to record it, you know? So it was quite the exercise. And I feel like I held up the recording for months just trying to get this stuff right, you know?
Just trying to
Yeah, they were waiting on me for
get
sure.
it right. Very cool. Well,
Can I
man,
ask you a question?
yeah.
How far away from Muscle Shoals are you?
Muscle Shoals is about an hour and a half north of here.
That's cool. You ever been there?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So like Muscle Shoals, Florence, and Huntsville, that whole area. Man, it's so rich with music and music history. We got the Alabama Music Hall of Fame up there, and you got Fame Studios, and but I'll tell you, man, it's been odd on that north side. Like Florence and Muscle Shoals, they still do some music. Huntsville does some music. But like even though like you have the Alabama Shakes and Jason Isbell and John Paul White and a lot of people that have had a great impact in modern music, I'm like it's I feel like I'm still we're still waiting on like that scene to kind of liven back up. It seems kind of like there's a lot of good players in that area, but it's just like there's not a lot of places to play, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
And so like and then like just Alabama, you have like when you have Central, you have the Birmingham area and Montgomery and Tuscaloosa, and then on the south side you start getting down to Opelika and Auburn and Mobile. And then you have like Red Clay Strays and those guys down there. But I mean, this, Alabama's, well, I don't know. I ain't never really, it's probably about what the same size as probably Nebraska, just differently shaped. But like right here where I'm at, man, I can get anywhere in Alabama in 2, 3 hours. So it's a pretty nice little hub.
Thanks.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
That's
man. Tell me, like, just going back to Lightning Steel's forming the band and like just getting into the studio is like, was these a friend's studio or is this a studio that y'all had worked with in the past? Like, how did this recording process go down?
when I was actually just happened to be walking down the street on the strip in Benson, here in Omaha, and our producer was getting a slice of pizza, in between sets that he was, doing at a show on the strip there. And, I told him that I said, "Hey, we got two records coming up. We're going to do this Leaf Blower record, which is our heavier band. And then I was like, we're also going to record, a Lightning Stills record." And he just was like, "Can you do me one favor? Can you please go into the studio and get a good drum set like recorded? And as soon as the drums are recorded, do the rest of wherever else you need, in your house, whatever. Just get a good bass down for that, you know?" And so he's like, I know a place." And he told us, and Dana and I had both recorded with it was Make Believe Studios. And one of the other bands that I used to be in a long time ago, I think we were the second band to ever record with them when they first started. And then Dan was shortly after for a comp that they were on for a record that came out. But yeah, we had worked with those guys a long time ago, and they're such awesome dudes. And we went in the studio, and they had everything set up for us. And we just walked in, played the songs, and walked right back out. It was just, it's a really cool place. And it's nice because they, I think, used to be more of a studio, and now they're more of a like developer studio as far as like developing apps and like different recording patches and plugins and things like that. And so, and they're doing like a lot of YouTube content and going through and talking about different ways on how they do stuff. So they're more on the production side over there. And so this amazing studio is just kind of sitting there. So we're trying to, get in there as much as possible.
Yeah, that's and that kind of reminds me of excuse me, of there's a place on the northern part of Lamar County where I'm from, Seligent, and not far from there, Don Penn, he's the guy that wrote "If Heaven Ain't a Lot Like Dixie," and that Hank Williams, they recorded it in Seligent, and now that building is a State Farm insurance office, but. If you know the right person, they'll take you to the back, and they still have all that recording equipment
Oh,
back there.
cool.
And it's but it's such a shame. It's like you got a lot of great history here, but I mean, like guys,
Yeah.
like will you get office equipment? Like, can we revitalize the space?
Right. Well,
But
yeah.
not, but no, nothing.
You know what's crazy is that you mentioned that it's, I believe the Make Believe Studio used to be like an old AT&T building that was converted into the studio. Yeah,
Yes.
which is wild.
And
Yeah.
what was their old building, the one in Little Italy? It was
Yeah, it used to be like
it had like
a bread factory or something.
No, there was like a
It
hot
was a
tub.
studio before it was their studio, yeah. But before that, I think like in the 20s or something, it used to be like an old bread factory or something.
Okay.
Yes, there's
Maybe
like
I'm
a
wrong.
lot. It looked like Party Central. They had
Oh
coffee.
yeah, like in the 70s,
Yeah, like
they
it
used
looked like
to do
70s party
some
room.
some filming there.
Well, guys, I just want to spend a little time with you talking about Lightning Stills and Leaf Blower, and just like just for those listening, as far as streaming and getting to know the music, available on all streamers, both the bands.
Yes.
And then, like, as far as just playing out and seeing a show, do y'all stay hunkered down in Omaha, or do y'all get out and play around a bit? How's that working out?
We've both done our fair share of touring over the years, but we have families and full-time jobs and everything right now, so it is difficult to get out of town. It's something that we love doing, but we just try and play, what we can around Omaha, and if we get offered a show out of town, then we'll hop on it. Or sometimes we'll look around for like Kansas City or Sioux Falls or Denver or something like that, something kind of close in the area. But as far as like touring and stuff goes, it's something that I think that would be fun to do, but it would be tricky.
I
Yeah.
understand, man.
Might have to be just like go play Chicago, drive right back,
Yeah.
or hit Minneapolis,
Or
Sioux
a
Falls, fly
weekend
back. Yeah.
Yeah,
Free.
weekend warrior.
Yeah. Which I'm fine with.
Definitely. We all have little
Yes.
kids, you know? So, yeah.
Absolutely, man. It's
Yeah.
like the band I was telling you about that I'm with earlier is, I mean, two out of three of us has got just young kids, married, and like it was the last run that we had done. We had done a Gulf Coast. We drove down Thursday. You play Thursday night. You play Friday. You play two shows on Saturday, and then haul back up on Sunday.
Yeah.
And like I remember the last time that we had done that, I was riding with a drummer, and he was like, man, this. It's a great time, but man, we're getting older. And he said, I don't know if I got much more of this weekend warrior in me. I
Yeah,
said, man, I was like, man, I get it.
it's
Yeah,
words. It's
sleeping
words.
like back in the day when I did it, I had no problem sleeping on floors and couches and being last man standing. And I just don't think that I could sleep on floors and couches anymore. Like,
Absolutely.
a difficult thing to do.
Mean, and it's the feasibility of it too, and like just the way I believe that kind of music is shaping is, just thanks to online. And I mean, I don't think it's fair at all how streamers treat musicians or artists with the way that they pay, but it does seem like it's completely doable to have like. Get you some good recordings and get your music out there, and you can kind of build a fan base, and then you kind of pick your battles.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably going to be the method. And it seems like, and this might have a little bit to do with Ticketmaster and all those other guys, but it seems to me, especially like in this area, like, and it may be this way in Omaha now, is like, it seems like more people are into DIY shows, like, we'll do a house show, or
Yeah.
like I own a liquor store, and we do shows. I can't legally sell in Alabama on Sunday, so I just invite a band over and they come play at the
Rad. There
store.
you go. That's really
You
cool.
just bring you a chair, and so like there's a whole lot of DIY and like just like we were talking about with those studio spaces that the building had another life at one time, or it's something different today. It's like, how can we use these spaces?
The Omaha is definitely a huge DIY hub, I would say. When I moved here in 2002, I moved into a house that became a house venue. We had shows like, sometimes 4 or 5 nights a week. But they're bands from like, all over, like a band from Germany played there, like bands from all over the place played there. And we ran that for about 5 years there. It was called Fort House here in Omaha. And I think for me, even before I moved to Omaha, the DIY thing has always just been a huge in everything that I do, like in my film making or making videos and stuff like that, and music and t-shirts. I'd like to screen print my own stuff back in the day, you know, like posters, like, you know, patches, like just anything. Just try and figure out any way to do it yourself, because it's just, you know, it seems like that's the best way you're going to get stuff done.
Absolutely. And save you a little bit of money. And I mean, also, it's got that personal touch on it.
It's got some charm to it, you know, and that's what I like. And when I see like some DIY looking stuff, to me, I see work, you know, they put hard work, and that's like, I mean, unless it's just some sloppy thing or, but I mean, most of the time, if it's a DIY project like that, then it's usually something they put their heart and soul into and are really proud of, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, the packaging on this Lightning Stills record was an idea that I had, and I had it like a year ago, and it came together exactly how I wanted it to. And I kind of did the DIY approach to it too. My wife took the pictures for the album cover. My buddy that's been helping us out, printing shirts for us DIY for 15 years, ever since we started. He's the one that did all the layout for us, and obviously we're not a big label or anything like that. We put this record out ourselves, you know. So, like, Max Trax is like, you know, I would say a DIY label. We're out here. I mean, we're in Leaf Blower, we're in Lightning Stills, and then Danny and I try and help him with Max Trax, you know, as much as I can promotion wise. But the problem too with what you were saying with streaming and everything like that, it's horrible trying to promote new music, like right now what we're doing, or what we were just doing before with Leaf Blower, because it's like screaming into the void, you know,
Absolutely.
like I put out so much stuff, what, like reviews, videos that I make, post all kinds of posts and stuff like that. And then I'll walk into work and I'll be like, "Hey boss, did you see any of the stuff that I posted?" And he's like, "I haven't seen you post anything in years." You know, it's just like,
I mean, I see
the
that
only
and
way
I
to
hear.
get it is to pay for it, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, it's that way on, like, you take Facebook, for instance. It's like, I'm better off promoting the shows on my personal page than the band page, because it's like, you know, the band page is like, if you're not boosting and promoting it, like backing it with money, nobody's gonna see it.
I see the same two people see it, you know?
And then we noticed, like, after we put all this energy into, reaching people from the basement here, you know what I mean? Like, everything happens out of here, you know what I mean? Like, we're promoting from our houses, from our phones, and shipping stuff out of here and getting people to click on stuff. But then we just go and play a show and then interact with people the old way, face to face, talking about it, and we sell way more product while we're sitting there having a conversation with people. It just goes back to
Absolutely.
that. Like, it's just, if you play shows, that's the way you're gonna sell more. Like, it's hard to get people to click on something.
Absolutely. And I mean, guys, even here, I mean, I've been doing just the shows here at the store for probably about 6 months.
That's so cool you do.
And you know, and our they're fairly well attended. All I ask is, like, just bring you a chair, and you know, you don't have to bring cash. Most of these guys got Cash App or Venmo. And then I just tell the band or the songwriter, whoever we have, I was like, bring all the merchandise that you have. And I was like, you're gonna make out really well. I was like, everybody that comes is, they're gonna buy something. Like, they'll buy a t-shirt, they'll buy a hat, the sticker, CD, vinyl, it don't matter. It's like, the people that are coming out to these shows, I was like, these are people that they love live music, and there's like, it's that long live mentality. It's like, I don't think it's recovered since COVID, just the scene itself.
Yeah, I agree. It's the same feeling. And then, and then you're sitting there at the merch table after people just bought everything that we had that we've been posting for that. We're like, we know they didn't see our posts because they would have been the first people to click on it, So there's something about just being out in front of people, showcasing what you have, and then talking to them afterwards, and then it's just like it's way smoother.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the real way to do it.
I went to one of the first tours I was on in the early 2000s. We went to a place in Oklahoma, and we showed up there, and it was a house show, and we knew that. But we showed up, and it was just like four or five guys there, and so we're like, "Oh, great! It's another one of these type of shows." But it was a guy that had a DIY record label, and he just liked to put shows on for him and his buddies, and he didn't promote it or anything like that. He would just have bands come to his house, and there'd be like him and like four or five of his buddies there, and then they bought everything that we had, like all the merch, one at least one of everything that we had. Like, we're sitting there like, man, this, it's 100 degrees outside, and we're playing in our underwear in the basement and to five people, and this isn't gonna go well. And then after the show gets over, like, they're just talking to us, and we spent the whole night talking to them, and they got all the merch, and they were so happy and so appreciative. And I just, that's cool. I love that. That's part of the DIY thing that I really like too.
That it kind of reminds me, I've got a friend of mine, he lives in Tupelo, Mississippi, and about once a year he'll do something like that. It might be like he's had about all his favorite musicians or band, and he gets them to come, like you're saying. He'll invite about 5 to 15 of his friends and be like, "On so and so date, I've got so and so playing the house. You can do a plus one. Food's gonna be provided, but once a year I like to put on these shows, and this is who I've really been into listening to this year, and they're gonna come play it." And I was like, "That's incredible,
Oh yeah, that's really
It's
cool.
nice." But dude, like, just like back to what you were talking about earlier with just like publicists and just like getting the word out is, like one reason why I was really excited about having you on is like I really believe in Raby. And so like when any like whether it's Nikki or if it's Heather or Ray himself or whoever, like, man, when they send me these reviews or these write-ups from, take Lightning and Steels, I mean, like, I'm a music head, man, and I've been a music head most of my life. And so, like, 10, 15 years ago, when I was reading something in Pitchfork for the Rolling Stone, that was how I've, oh, okay, it's for real.
Absolutely.
They got a good review from Pitchfork. That
I
means
better
something.
listen to this.
Yes.
I better
And
give this
so
a shot.
that's kind of the with Raby and any of those guys that publishes group, it's like if they speak highly of something, I was like, I'll bet on this.
That's
Yeah,
really cool. That makes me feel good.
yeah,
Yeah.
man.
But that's like back in the day, I used to get mail order catalogs, from record labels and stuff like that. And the only way you would find bands was either through reviews, through really liking the way the artwork was on the cover and being like, "Hey, this looks like something I might enjoy," or having another band compared to the band that you like from one of those,
Absolutely. And then I know back when we were teenagers and even early 20s, man, just getting out of high school was it was festivals. Like, Memphis would throw a great festival, or Atlanta would go, and like we wouldn't even look at the lineup. And then it's Friday, and you got the flyer in your hand. It's be like, I don't know how they found me, but they did. It's playing at 5 o'clock. Let's go see what that is, and it's like it's that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, man.
Something else I was thinking about with what we were talking about with touring earlier, and us going on tour now as opposed to when we used to go on tour. I can't even imagine how bands are touring right now with the gas prices. That's twice as much as it was when we used to tour.
Absolutely, man. I mean, it's a different animal now. And it's like, what's crazy, and I'm sure it's that way in Omaha. And I mean, it's one thing that we've been working hard around here in this area is, inflation, everything goes up, but you've got these bars and venues. I mean, they're still paying the same exact wage they was 20, 25 years ago.
Right, exactly. And also, I mean, it seems like I've noticed a trend where a lot of the younger generation isn't drinking as much as our generation did. And so bars are losing sales on shows. People will come there and not drink.
Mississippi and Alabama, they both have like medical marijuana, and I think I read an article like late last year that said, since America has been moving more towards like easing the laws on marijuana, that the alcohol industry itself has lost $800 billion. And I was like, well, I could see it, because I mean, like you're saying, it's like, even if people go out, I was like, they're not drinking,
Right.
Right. And there's more than two NA brands now.
Yeah.
There's more than just O'Doul's and
There's a
Busch Light.
whole like section at the grocery store of non-alcoholic beers. Of all the same beers that you can get regular, you can get a non-alcoholic version of it too.
Oh, brother. I mean, just here at the store, it's like I sell beer, wine, and liquor here. But one of my best-selling products, NACE.
Yep.
Zero is my favorite. That's
I've got those. Bush and A's are big here. And then I like that Athletic brand. If you're like more into a
Athletic.
craft beer,
And he likes Athletic. Yeah, I
yeah,
like those.
you can kind of get closer to like an IPA, which is like what I like,
Busch NA was what I actually started on, because I started drinking NA beers when I was still drinking. Because I have crazy ways. That's why addiction is a funny thing. I had all these crazy ways of justifying stuff. But I quit drinking real beer and started drinking Busch NA so that I could keep drinking whiskey, because I couldn't drink whiskey and beer because I'd get too fucked up. So I had to quit one or the other, and I didn't want to quit the whiskey. So I was like, well, I'll just drink a bunch of Busch NAs. And so that kind of got me onto the Busch NA train, and I really liked NAs. And even when I would go out to the bar, I wouldn't even get, or even if I wasn't drinking whiskey, I just liked Busch NA for a long time after that. And I've been really happy to see all these new brands come out. And they got those THC drinks now too. You
Yes,
got
I
those?
do.
That's crazy that you say that, because I quit drinking like shortly after Fort, like probably, I don't know, 9 months after Craig or so, or a year. And that was during COVID, right? So there was no like social anxiety, no weirdness of like, not having a beer in a bar or something. And then I went like the first 2 years of not even thinking about NA as like, an easy like solve for this weird social situation where I feel like I gotta have something in my hand,
Yeah, absolutely.
And then once he was like, dude, NAs, they got NAs here. And I was like, oh my gosh. I remember the moment. It was at one of our shows and I was like nervous and I was like, ah, And he's like, dude, they have NAs here. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize that I could like lean on that. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh my gosh. So yeah. That's like an easy way to like trick yourself, you know what I mean? Out of that
Dude,
weird
absolutely.
anxiety. Yeah.
That was something that helped. I don't think that I would recommend it for everyone, because I think that
No,
it's
me either. I'm not
slow.
promoting that.
But dude,
But
I'm go ahead.
it worked for me because I always had a beer in my hand for 20 years, like whether, I mean, towards the end, even if it was the NA beer, but I've always had a beer in my hand like all day long. And so it was hard to transition. So first I transitioned to just plain sparkling water in a can, because
Yeah.
I was a can guy, you know. So,
Right, me too. Yeah.
that carbonation and like the crack of the can and everything like that. But I don't know. I really enjoy having a NA beer and, you know, having that so many different options now, even though I stick with one.
I tell you, do this, and like with that social anxiety or whatever it is that you're talking about, it's like even if I go out now and I'm not drinking, I'm like you said, just out of habit. And it's almost like just to keep from a buddy of mine from saying something, it's like I go straight to the bar and I just get me an athletic, you know,
Yeah.
and like he's not even paying attention. But like if I would have came back with a water or a Sprite or something, he'd be like, you ain't drinking? I was
Yeah.
like, what's it matter what I'm doing?
Don't worry about
But
it.
I was like, that whole social aspect of it is like, well, you're at a bar, you're supposed to drink. It was like, not necessarily.
No, yeah.
Yourself an NA beer and throw it in a koozie
Yeah.
this and
They
walk
have
around.
coffee at the
Yeah.
bar that we were playing at that night. It's like our friend's place, you know, and our other friend like promotes the shows there too. So they make sure everybody's comfortable, you know, and they know we don't drink, and they fired up some coffee for me that day. Like I remember that. And like, and then I didn't even just the moment of realization that I was like, oh my gosh, I could try an NA, you know what I mean? Or whatever. And I was like, whoa, like it totally tricked me, you know, 'cause I had something cold in my hand, you know, and then I could just be nervous about the show and that was it.
That's it. Yeah, that's
You
it.
know, back to just being nervous,
Yeah.
you
I mean, same way here, and I think it may be just like I think it seems like a lot of musicians and bands, songwriters are kind of catching on to this is I've got a coffee maker here, and as far as I know, I think like out of my staff, I think I'm the only one that drinks coffee. But like every it seems like every time a band comes, it's like guys, water, any soda I have, I got coffee, or I mean you can help yourself, you can have a drink. It's always coffee. I
Yeah.
was like, man, just give me a cup of coffee, we'll be good.
Yeah. Just need a little boost.
Keep going, a little go juice. Well, guys, I want to do about three more questions and we'll start wrapping it up once again, guys. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, man, I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Course.
First question that I have is like, man, 2026 is just kicking off. Lightning Steels, Leaf Blower, like, what are some goals or what are some things that you would like to accomplish for this year? Have you thought about it much?
I for me, I think that both bands, it kind of took a while to get here to put out these debut records because it was Leaf Blower's debut one as well, even though we've been a band for like 10 years. We put out a 7-inch and a cassette tape and a live cassette a while back. And we've had streaming stuff that we released, but this is our first like full length, and same thing with Lightning Stills. And I think for me is just staying on the train and putting out more songs. I've got plenty of song lyrics written, and basically I just have to hand those to Mike and he turns it into something incredible. And so I just would like to keep pumping out songs and start pumping out albums, you know, not wait so long and just start doing a record a year or something like that.
Hell yeah. What about you,
Yeah,
Danny?
that's probably true. What, you know, alongside what Craig was saying, like we had been working on this, so in our minds it's already sort of not an afterthought because we're promoting it right now and we're playing all these songs, you know, like live together, but we're already working on the next album. You know what I mean?
We've
Like,
already got songs recorded. We've already got songs
yeah.
like we've practiced. Mike and I went down to Nashville and played at D's a month or two ago, and we played two new songs that aren't even on the record.
Yeah.
Dude, I just went and caught a buddy of mine play a show, and you know it's a 3-hour show, and it's about halfway through the set, and he takes a break, and I said, man, I don't know. I don't know if I've heard any of these songs recorded. He said, "Oh, dude, just everything I just did on that set, it's been recorded, but one of those albums will be out next year, and then the album after that will be out the
Dagger.
following year." And I was
Right.
like, "My goodness, man!" I was like, and he's like, he's selling the latest record of his that's out, and I was like, it's so funny because I was like, you're not even really playing that record anymore. Like you moved on, but like the production side of things is like waiting to be caught up on, you know? It's like
Yeah.
you can't pump these albums out quick enough.
I'm like that. I'm a very go, like impatient type person. And Danny's the opposite. So we're kind of a good
Balancing.
balancing thing. But I
I
think
tend to over-edit. I was an editor in a past life, so I sit on things. You know what I mean? Yeah. Go ahead.
I would love to just start putting out records, our well recording records, and keeping them in our pocket, and then just having them, giving them to Dan and just saying, put these out, stagger them however you want, and just stay a couple albums ahead at all times. I think I would love to do that, and I think it's possible.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask this as far as like creative outlets. I mean, we're all musicians, but and I know that you do like videographer, and you mentioned like screen printing and other DIY projects. What is another way that y'all are able to kind of find other creative outlets when music ain't really working out? Maybe it's reading, or maybe it's like I'm thinking about the music video that you created with like, let's see if we can tie this camera to the dog and let's see what he does, or whatever else, right?
I had just with that one for Gas Me Up, I had just gotten done doing all the promotional videos for Leaf Blower, and so it was like the seventh video in a year that I had made, and I kind of was running out of steam, so I was like, I'm just gonna get this GoPro and throw it on my dog and turn it into a lyric video and do whatever. But the For me, doing those little videos, like I'm not a professional videographer or anything like that. All my videos are very choppy and rough, and that's kind of how I like it. And I do most of the filming and editing and production and everything like that myself because I live a half an hour away from Danny in a small town called Plattsmouth, and it's hard to, get everyone's schedule, especially with everyone having families and stuff like that. It's hard to reach out to get everyone's help and then drive and get everyone together. So I just try and take things on myself, and that's definitely one of my main creative outlets is making stuff like that. And also writing, I'm getting more into it, and I kind of have ideas for different projects I would like to do with writing. But I have all kinds of other music projects and weird shit, really weird stuff. Dan?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what I do. I just stay busy, man.
Basketball.
I feel like I'm just running from one thing to the next. Yeah, I'm behind the scenes for the record label and stuff like that. But creatively, I don't know if that's like an outlet. It really definitely keeps me busy. I play basketball. I coach basketball. Coach my kids.
Right on.
Yeah, I've just kind of running from one thing to the next, I feel.
All right. Well, guys, last question to walk out of the door is, man, just like some of the bases that we covered, what was kind of your favorite parts of this, and is there anything else that you would like to add on to before we go?
I've really enjoyed this whole conversation. This has been real easy going, and I would love to come back here sometime. Oops, sorry about that.
You good?
I don't know. This has just been a real easygoing conversation and real fun to do. And I appreciate you having us on. This is really cool. We've got our release show February 20th at Slowdown with our buddy's Face, the singer from Face, Javed, actually played drums on this album that we are just put out. We got him on, and our buddy Fletch is going to be playing with us. We've got limited to 100 whiskey pint vinyl on maxtraxrecords.com available for pre-order right now. That's one of those things that we've been, promoting, and I feel like we're just showing it to two people out of the hundreds or thousands or followers or whatever that we have.
Right on. I know how that goes. Danny, anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Yeah, I'll just follow up what Craig was saying. Just go get the limited pre-order while you can. You know, they're going quick. It's at our website. It's MaxTraxRecords, maxtraxrecords.com. It's right on the homepage, and the Leaf Blower Records on there too. We have like a few of the smoke colored vinyl left. Those are almost gone. But other than that, the regular record is still available. But yeah, go. You can get the pre-order, and we'll ship those out a week before it comes out, and you can get it early. And yeah, other than that, you know, check out any live shows that we have coming up.
We've
Right
got
on,
Bandcamp
man.
and all the streaming sites, and we got YouTube channels and
Yeah. Lightning Stills has a YouTube channel with all of Craig's videos on there, as well as the Leaf Blower YouTube and the Max Tracks. So yeah, you can have a good time watching all of our funny videos on there.
I'll link the website in the show description, and also like I just bought the and I don't know if people still use websites, but you can go to coolshit.com. I own that domain now.
Nice.
It's
Awesome.
kind of, but it's spelled KUHL shit.com. So that'll be a link for all things Porch Talk or the shows, or just like guys that have like y'all that have come on the show. Is like if you want to kind of keep up with them and what they're doing, I'll put a hyperlink down there and they can jump right in on it.
That's rad.
Awesome.
Well, hi guys. Hey, Craig, Danny, hey, thank y'all so much.
Hey, thank
Thank
you
you,
very
Alan.
much. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
Yeah, man.
man. Great time.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown score second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.